Here's our top story. A leading academic has suggested loyalists should think about walking away from the latest stormont process for dealing with the past. Dr. Graham Spencer from Portsmouth University says loyalists have nothing to gain from the process and should consider ignoring it while they are being ignored so they can develop their own way forward. This comes as the Ulster Unionist Party have thrown their weight behind calls for loyalists to be involved in the talks. Fermanagh and South Tyrone MP Tom Elliott has told EamonMalley.com that if Republicans are to be involved, we need to hear from loyalists. The party's justice spokesperson is Doug Beattie, who is with us this morning. Doug, good morning to you.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. And the former MLA, Basil McRae. Basil, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, Doug, set this out for us. What's the gripe? What's going on?
Well, I don't think there's a gripe at all, Stephen. I think that there's a reality that we all must live by, and there's a process. We have to deal with the past, and to deal with the past, we must engage all interested groups, be they political groups, interest groups, victims groups, and part of that has to be those who represent loyalists in Northern Ireland. So I think it's only right and I think it's only fair that they are included in any discussions, as their voices heard, and they have a degree of engagement and a degree of ownership. I think that's a fair ask. I think it's a fair call. And I don't think it's just about because Republicans have got a voice, loyalists should have a voice. I think everybody needs to have a voice if we're going to move this forward.
Well, they would have a voice if they had a bigger mandate.
Well, they would have a voice if they had a bigger mandate, and you're absolutely right. And in many ways, as a working class unionist myself, who comes from a working class area, I believe I represent many working class loyalists. But that's not the point. There's some of them. There is a group out there who do not believe that they are being represented. And if they don't believe they're being represented, they're being disenfranchised, and therefore they have to be heard. And if they aren't heard, they will think that what we're doing is some kind of stitch-up deal, and they won't deliver what we want to deliver on the ground. So to get delivery on the issues of the past, we need to involve everybody.
Well, Basil McRae, the DUP would say they represent working-class loyalists.
Well, I think 18 years on since from the Good Friday Agreement, I think that there's plenty of time to work out who they're going to vote for and what they want to say. My real problem when Doug comes on about fairness and equity and let's see what we can do here is these people... You know, who is it these that are not being represented? When we were on talking to Winston the last time, he was talking about combatants as if that was some way, that's okay, we're one of the good guys. These were not good guys. These were people that carried out, in the part, some really heinous, horrible, desperate crimes. And I'm really surprised.
But that's part of the complex nature of dealing with the past that, as you very well know, as we all know, some of those people will say that but for the particular situation in Northern Ireland, they would never have been drawn into crime. They were either trying to defend their country, defend their community, from both perspectives. And so it goes on.
That's just putting some sort of gloss on it, as if these people were out manning the barricades against oppression. You sit and look at the crimes that people committed. There were crimes against humanity. And there may have been an argument 18 years ago when we said, let's see if we can put the past behind us. Let's see what we can do. Okay, 18 years ago, that's right. But 18 years further on, why are we inviting people to the table that cannot get a mandate, that cannot represent, you know, can't get enough votes to represent people? Doug Beattie represents people. The DUP represents people. Those people should be at the negotiating table. They should be trying to work it out. But people whose only contribution to the future is what they did in the past should not be there.
Doug?
Well, you know, I don't want to get into a screaming match about this. And in many ways, what Basil is saying is right. And I would be the first one to stand up and say that what loyalists did in the past was heinous. And I would not support that. In fact, I was one of the people who was out fighting against it. But here's the issue, is we've moved forward and people need to be heard regardless, especially those who have transitioned out of conflict. Now, we listen to the church. The church does not have a mandate, but they certainly have a voice that we need to listen to. The Orange Order does not have a mandate, but it has a voice that we need to listen to. All I am saying is that this vast myriad of people, some of them do not have a mandate, but they do have a voice, and that voice is important if we are going to move things forward. Victims don't have
a
mandate.
So who represents them?
Who represents the...
Who represents these people you're saying are unheard? Well, so if they're going to go, for example, and meet the Secretary of State or whoever, who represents them? Who chooses that?
You've got various groups, and it's really up to
these so-called community workers. You pick one of them at random, do you?
It's really up to the Secretary of State to decide who he feels is right to represent them. You've got the Loyalist Communities Council, which could represent them. You've got the ACT Initiative, which could represent them. There's various groups out there, accredited groups out there, groups that are doing good work that could represent them. See, right now, Stephen, I'm sitting on the Flags Identity, Culture and Traditions Commission. I'm sitting in Armagh Hotel going through a seminar with them, and we're looking at engagement right across the spectrum of Northern Ireland, because everybody has got an interest in this country for the future. And what I want to do is bring people into that conversation.
You could argue that one of the punishments from the people of this country, from the public, that if they don't like you enough to vote for you, then you don't have the positioning of getting access to the likes of the Secretary of State, to the likes of being involved in talks like this, that part of the reason why you need to connect with the public, that your behaviour and your policies need to be consistent with what civilised people want in a society, is that if you do not do that and you want to be an influencer in this society, you won't get there, Doug. What's the point of giving these people an open door access to decision-making in this country if they don't have a mandate from the public?
Well, first of all, I'd say to you, Stephen, what you've just said is an absolutely fair argument, and I can agree with an awful lot of what you've just said here. And I'm not saying that they have access to the decision-making. I'm saying that they're being accessed to have a voice, that they have an input. Everybody has an input in this country in the future, and these people have to have an input. See, if they don't, we will disenfranchise them. They will slip back into the shadows. They will think we're doing some kind of dodgy deal, and they will not engage, and therefore it will not deliver. This is too important to sit here and say, because of what you did in the past, we're not going to let you have a say in our future. If that was the case, then we wouldn't have Republican politicians who have got a say in this country's future. That can't be the case. And my argument is, if we want an inclusive society in the future, we have to have everybody on board. And that, to me, means we need to bring loyalist groups who are in transition or who represent loyalist communities.
Well, how long are they going to be in transition for? There's another question. Transition for how long? The next 2 decades?
Well, you know, you maybe need to ask the question of the people who brought out the plan for paramilitarism, or you may need to ask the people who allow us to have segregated prison regimes, how long they're going to allow this to go for. I argue that we need a line in the sand to say this is where it ends, and everything beyond this are going to be treated as common criminals.
Okay, we'll find out what you think at home this morning. 0303 80 55 55. Jim Wilson positions himself as a community worker over many years, has been on the programme many, many times. You're hearing... Morning, Jim.
Morning, Stephen.
So you're hearing the argument today. Why should people who do not have a political mandate, in other words, let's not describe that in any more fancy words than it deserves, in other words, the people have rejected them, why should they have a say in how we deal with the past?
Well, Stephen, if you remember, you know, this is sort of dragged out of Basel. Whenever the Good Friday Agreement was getting pulled together, and into Stormont walks Sinn Féin, into Stormont with David Trimble, walked the loyalist paramilitaries to try and engage to get a way forward for this country. There was absolutely no problems then with Basil's team and the people who were in the Ulster Unionist Party sitting down with the loyalist community and the people who were engaged in violence with the conflict that was going on in this country. And for Basil to turn around and say the participants of the conflict should not be involved and trying to design our future is absolutely ludicrous. And just because people don't give you a mandate, and there is a mandate there, by the way, in some small form for sections of loyalism when Gary McMichael and David Irvine and Billy Hutchison and others were voted in, not massively the way Republicans got their votes, but there was still a mandate. And also, ask Basil.
I'm talking about now.
The number of people that went through our jails within loyalism went into the thousands. So does he want to exclude that section of this community?
Well, why would you ask
him? And if you remember, by excluding
well, hold on, let him reply.
Trouble started over.
Go on, Basil.
When people felt they were excluded.
Basil.
So here's the issue. 18 years ago, if there was a change, then that was a good thing. If people renounced violence, apologised for what they did, saw the error of their ways and said, we want to build a future, fair enough. You've had 18 years to win the mandate, to convince the people that that's what you've done. What I see in the communities is there's still extortion, there's still paramilitary activity, there's still oppression of people from loyalist working class areas, and you're trying to tell me that the people that are doing that are somehow not
as there is in Republican communities too.
You had your say. You want to let me finish, because I will put this out to Doug Beattie as well. I'll put this out to Doug Beattie as well. I am surprised and disappointed that the UUP, which used to be the party for the Good Friday Agreement, that used to have certain standards, is now trying to allow them to align themselves with this. This is not the way forward. If you want to represent your people, get a vote. Get out there and convince people on the ground that you're doing the right thing, and then you can go to the table. Otherwise, leave it to the people that have got
the mandate. I think the dig at your party there, Doug Beattie, is that you're trying to get loyalist votes.
Well, I've already said at the very start of this, Stephen, I believe I speak for loyalists in my constituency area as well. Yes, I'm out there and I'm talking and I'm working with them. And we can look at all of the negative things that they have brought to society, and we can focus on that. But I tell you what, go to Upper Ban. Go and see that the old person's visit programme that the loyalist groups have...
Hold on a minute. There's an
Upper Ban. No, but what I'm saying to you, Stephen, is we've progressed and there is so many more positive things.
But there's an inconsistency in what you've just said.
Basil McRae telling me his opinion, and he hasn't got a mandate, but he's giving an opinion. I'm just saying that these people have got an input.
But there's an inconsistency in what you've just said. You've just said that you feel that you represent loyalists. So if you feel you represent loyalists, why do they need to have a separate voice in the talks?
Because I said this at the very start, Stephen, there are groups within loyalism who will not see me as representing them, who will not see the DUP as representing them, will see us as big house unionism,
Basil?
As a term they use, but they need to be heard.
Doug's argument is just totally inconsistent. You see, I agree with all of the points he's making. What I don't agree with is the conclusion that his party has reached. And I have to say, Doug used to wear the uniform to go out and defend us against these people. Now he's turning around and saying, oh, look, they're misunderstood or they're not being represented, not being brought in. They had their chance. They had 18 years. They are not being accepted by the community. They are not getting a vote from the community. I would like them to transform. I would like the leaders of those communities to come forward to embrace democracy and be heard of.
Go on,
but
Jim.
That's not happening.
Basil, no, they do. Just get yourself in the gear. Go into the loyalist communities where there's work being done, hand over fist, it's good work. Other than sitting down behind an armchair, reading the Sunday paper and reading the rubbish that's going on. 99% of the stuff going out in the loyalist
communities.
Let me finish. I give you your chance. Me my chance. In every society that we have, there is people who will take up the mantle when they see an easy way to get into drugs, money-making, and whatever. And those criminals will be criminals whether it was a conflict in this country or not. So they are what we have in every society in the world. Try and be positive about my community, about the community that I come from, and go and look at the work that's being done all over Northern Ireland. And here's the thing you need to put in your pipe and smoke it. When was the last Republican killed by mainstream paramilitaries in this country?
And so, here's the question for you.
Answer my questions. Two questions. Before you bounce to what you want people to hear, you answer my two questions.
I would like to know from you, why are you not getting the vote?
Why am I not getting it? I haven't stood for election.
He's not actually talking about you, Jim. He's talking about you and people who you feel represent you. Why are you not getting the vote?
I've said this before on your program. Within the unionist or loyalist circles, there is a great attitude towards people with paramilitary backgrounds, with people who were involved in the conflict. And we didn't do well coming out of the conflict. As loyalists, we didn't do well. We didn't manage it as well as we could have. A lot of people turned to gangsterism and all the rest of it. And the tabloids and the red tops kept going at certain figures, quite rightly so, whenever those figures were engaged, and criminality and all the rest of it. And we were stained by all this. But yet of all, the percentage of the good work out there. And if you go to people within the Northern Ireland office and find out, you will find out there's a massive amount of work going on, good work going on in loyalist communities. And Basil wants to just stroke that out so it doesn't exist. I'm not into the political game anymore. I'm into the community development and trying to...
Did Basil answer your question,
together.
By the way?
Pardon?
Did Basil answer your question, Jim?
And no, he didn't answer any one of the two of them.
State your question.
Why should I answer your question, Basil, when you're not answering?
No, he's asking you to remind him what the question was. He's forgotten.
Well, one of the questions was, when was the last time he went out and engaged with this loyalist community to find out the positive work that's going on? Okay, that was one of them. To answer me that one.
So I talked to people in loyalist communities in Bangor where community workers were attacked by thugs with hammers. You know, that was on the Nolan Show. You remember that? I remember it well. Yeah, so I talk about all of that. So you turn around and you say, is there...
But you see, that was a negative. That was a negative you're talking about. I'm talking about a positive.
Well, let's let Basil reply.
Positive.
Let's let Basil speak.
You asked me the question. I'm telling you, my experience is that your communities that you talk about live in fear of paramilitaries. They are worried about them. They don't want them around the place. And if they did want them, then they would get a vote. They would get an electoral mandate. They would go out and say, look at all the good work, and I would encourage them. And in fact, I'm not sitting saying here that everybody is bad. I'm saying there are good work that comes forward. But you know what?
When did you say that, Bozo, in your commentary?
I just said it now. When you get associated.
I know.
Do you know what you said to me? You put on the air, and once again, you shoot yourself in the foot. You actually went through a litany of all of the things that you've done wrong as a community. You've said about the red tops and how you were victimised. You said about the heinous crimes you don't support. That's the problem with all of this. If loyalism can get itself together and come forward and win a mandate, can actually say to the people, we're doing good work in our community, please support us, they will get the vote and they should be at the table. Until that happens, you leave it to the likes of the DUP and the DUP.
Here's Thomas in Belfast. Morning, Thomas.
How you doing, Stephen? I think it's a bit ironic, Basil defending Republicans being there, considering there was a man shot in West Belfast last night and a shooting in the Markets area, both Republican areas, yesterday. Basil's problem is there's thousands of ex-prisoners on the Republican side and Loyalist side who are absolutely nothing to do with any of the criminality that's happening in this country. They're out doing an honest day's work. There's other people involved here too, Stephen. There's nobody from the IRSP involved in these talks, and they represent the NLA. I would imagine most people would be disgusted at Loyalists in the NLA not being included, because people will be allowed to ask the IRA what they've done and the Brits what they've done, and everybody else will be outside that. But I'd like to ask you, Basil, if there's no Loyalist representatives included in this, who out of your party, or have you delegated someone to go around all the ex-prisoners and the ex-combatants to ask them to get their input into these talks?
Well, I'm only here talking as an individual. You know, I'm not representing a party or anything else. I'm just explaining to you what I think.
Well, are you going to go around the Loyalist ex-prisoners in your area and your constituency and ask them to let you know what happened within the conflict and ask them? Who's going to do it?
You know what I'm going to say? He said, you see, if you've got information about things in the past, you see if you know where bodies are buried or crimes have been committed or things have gone wrong or whatever, you should come forward to the PSNI and tell people. You should actually let people know, why is this information not come forward now? You see, if you're part and parcel of the way forward, be involved, get a mandate, get elected.
But they're not part and parcel of the way forward. They're not included in these talks. They're not included. Neither is the NLA. I'm sure people within the Protestant and Catholic community would like to ask the NLA why they were murdered, what happened with Darkley and stuff like that. Why would they come in to do that?
I can only speak for one person, which is myself. But what I will tell you is this. You see, if you get this round table where you have all of these people that were the perpetrators of crimes round trying to justify their existence, trying to say why we did this and what we did that, I actually say as a victim, I think I would be pretty, pretty upset about the whole thing.
Doug Beattie, do you want to respond to that?
Well, I mean, I'm going to go back to this again and say it's about engagement. And people can scream and shout all they want. People will listen to the church who don't have a mandate. People will listen to the Orange Order who don't have a mandate because they have a stake in this country. These people have a stake in our future, Now, if anybody thinks that we're going to sit in a round table and people are going to sit there and say what I did 20, 30 years ago was justified, they're absolutely wrong. What we're talking about is how we deal with the past for our future. And I think that's the important thing to do. And I don't understand. I mean, Basil is a level-headed man, and I don't understand why Basil thinks that the only people who should be involved in deciding our future are those people who got a vote. I believe everybody in this country has a stake in our future, and we have to deal with this. And it's failed up till now, so why can't we move it forward in a different way?
Andy in Lisburn. Morning, Andy.
Morning, Stephen. A couple of points. First of all, Basil, his mandate was that good. He couldn't get the Protestant people out to vote for him. He actually had a full lease party. That's how good his mandate was. The second point is, Sinn Féin have got there and they've got a mandate. Why do they have the mandate? They see during the 80s when they were out bombing and shooting.
Sinn Féin weren't out bombing and shooting anybody.
Right,
they're a political party.
Sinn Féin, IRA, same thing. Who's the deputy minister? What has he done? But anyway,
Sinn Féin have a political mandate and are a political party embracing peace and democracy in this country.
See during the 80s. They were having secret talks with the British government. The British government is the reason why Sinn Féin have got a mandate. They lead them up their garden path. They get rid of the troubles. They get them into the table. That's how they got there. Why can't the loyalists not be led the same way and given their same guidance? The loyalists and Protestant people at the minute, we vote for the DUP, also the unionists, and the Lions. We don't need a paramilitary party to vote for to get a mandate. We have our mandate.
John in Belfast. Morning, John.
Hello, Stephen. So I'd just like to remind Basil, when the Good Friday Agreement was in trouble and the British government sent Mo Molan into the jails, did he support that?
You want me to answer?
Yes.
I'm probably the only last remaining person. I'd be interested to know what Doug's position is on this.
Do you support Mo Molan getting into the jails to talk to loyalist prisoners? Let's hear the answer.
I voted for the Good Friday Agreement, and I was proud to do so. I did see the situation there and said we've got to find a way of talking to people.
My point is,
18 years further on, people should have made the transition by now. People should have been able to go out and say, we've put the past behind us, we're not going to do that again, we're going to engage properly in our communities, and we're going to be welcome there. And my argument is, you see, if that happens, you'll get a vote. You'll be represented. You can go to the table. At the moment, what I heard from the previous speaker before you is that they vote for the DUP, they vote for the UUP, and they vote for the Alliance. That's who represents them, not people that do not get a mandate, not people that have not changed their ways. I don't think they've changed their ways, and that's why I don't think they should be at the table.
Okay, Fred and Tremor. Morning, Fred.
Hello.
Yes, Fred.
They talk about a shared future. How can you be a shared future if you don't have everybody at the table?
Fred, thank you. And John in Belfast. Morning, John. Hello, John.
Hello. Basil, I'd like to ask you, what is your mandate? Why are we listening to you? You're still going on all these years. You don't know. You're talking. Give them some toilet roll, please. Everybody has to be involved. Everybody has to be part of the future.
So what's your mandate? What's your mandate?
Why should I have a mandate?
Well, because
all I want,
you
all
and
I want
just,
is a shared future.
You and I are just explaining an opinion that we have. It's not a mandate. Basil, we're not going to the talks.
Has anybody voted for you this year? Are you an MLA?
Has anybody voted for you?
I didn't say
I'm here.
You, Basil.
I'm here giving you an opinion. And I want to say to you this. You see the people that I know in my circle. You see the people that I used to engage with when I was in politics. They will be surprised. And, I like Doug Beattie, and he's been very kind to me. I'm not having a go at Doug. But I have to say, I think this is a mistake. Getting close to people that most people object to. There's no harm about finding a way of getting them into a different route in their communities to try to persuade them to do the right thing. But frankly, the UUP should be a party that has its own identity and stand on its own grounds and say, this is what we believe in, and they should not be arguing for other people that apparently they don't represent. I don't think it's the right way forward.
What are they arguing about?
Okay. Listen, thank you very much indeed. Doug Beattie, are you still with us this morning?
Yes, I'm still here.
I see if we look at yesterday's story just before you go, the story of how the DUP's Michelle McElveen changed the name of this boat, which had been named in Irish, and changed the boat name to the Queen of Ulster. And I see that Gerry Kelly has said the following this morning: the DUP's minister's decision to remove an Irish name from a boat goes well beyond petty. It's downright bigoted. It's anti-Irish, he says. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I'll say I don't think it's bigoted. I don't think it's anti-Irish. I think it's just something that the DUP do. There's a petulance about some of these things that are done, which just leaves me exasperated. It didn't bother me in the slightest that the boat was named in Irish, not in the slightest. I knew exactly what it's there for. To me, it's just the whole thing's a bit of petulance. And I think, you know, anybody feeding into that narrative needs to stop and have a hard look at themselves.
So are you with Gerry Kelly in this one?
No, I just said that Gerry Kelly is maybe over-egging the pudding a little bit on this. He knows what the DUP is. They are partners in government, and he knew that the first opportunity they get, they would change the name back to English. That's a policy of that department. That's what they've done. That's up to them. They can have their petulant arguments all they want. I'm not really interested.
Michelle McElveen has also announced that her department's agriculture, environment, rural affairs, isn't it?
Yes.
She has said that her department will have a single language policy.
Yes.
And that's moving away from Sinn Féin's approach, where communication was essentially done in English and Irish.
That's correct.
Do you agree with a single language policy in this country? Is that inclusive? Is that bringing everybody in?
No, it's not. But let's just remember Let's just remember something here. That, you know, this is an executive which is run by the DUP and Sinn Féin. I mean, they all sit together, the executive, in one room. They all discuss things. They've told us that they aren't going to work in silos, that this is all about joined-up government. If this is joined-up government, surely they have discussed this at the executive and said, look, by the way, my department is going to be a all-English department, a one-language department. And Sinn Féin said, oh, OK, no problem with that. If they haven't, then what they're saying is, well, actually, there's no change to government. It's not joined up. They're still in silo mentality, and they all do as they wish.
Yeah, but my question to the Ulster Unionist Party this morning is, do you agree with a single language policy? If you had the clout to get enough votes to be in government, would you be doing what the DUP have done in this department and get rid of the Irish language and have a single language policy?
Right, well, if I can give you this, Stephen, because you're asking me a very personal view here, and I don't have...
No, I'm not. I'm asking you as an Ulster Unionist representative.
You're asking me, and I'm going to give you as my perspective on this. Had I taken over that department, I wouldn't have changed anything. I didn't see the need to change it, so I wouldn't...
But that's on that specific story, but I'm asking you something slightly broader, Doug. Look, I do acknowledge that you can't decide your party's policy, OK?
Yes.
I get that. I'm presuming you don't know what your party's policy is on this, and that's fine. We can establish that in the coming days and weeks. But you personally, what is your view on ministers? What's your view on saying, do you know what? There's money spent having two different languages in Northern Ireland. So do you then think that's good value for money because it brings in everybody from the community, be it that they have an affinity to the Irish language or indeed the English language? Or do you think there should be one language? And presumably you would think it should be English. So where do you stand as an elected representative on this?
Where I stand is where I've always stood, Stephen, and I believe in equality and I believe in inclusiveness. And I see no issue whatsoever of having that second language. If I drive through Scotland, I will see signposts which has a Scottish Gaelic in it. It's no less British. If I do the same in Wales, I'll see it in Welsh. It's no less British. I have stood in Cardiff Arms Park. I've listened to the Welsh rugby team sing the national anthem in Welsh. They are no less British. I'm very relaxed about the whole thing, if I'm perfectly honest with you. It doesn't annoy me in the slightest that we have Irish language as a dual language. But it doesn't have primacy over English.
OK, well, it's really interesting this, and thank you very much indeed, Doug, because if you look, I'm actually reading from a Belfast Telegraph article here online, and they have noticed that within hours of his appointment as Education Minister, the DUP's Peter Weir appeared to be moving away from a dual language policy, they say, with many Irish language references removed from the website. So it's just an interesting discussion, this, as to whether you feel that these departments should be reflecting things in English and Irish as part of the society that we're in. We know the differences of opinion. Or do you think it should be the English language all the way? 03030 80 55 55.